This podcast is brought to you in part by ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Whether you're buying or selling home, condo, or any type of property, trust Amanda to help match you with up to three top agents in your area. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Hey, all you rock stars from Washington, D.C. This is the Rock on the Money podcast, episode 100, Amanda. 100.
Whoa.
Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all those hard-earned monies. We're here to coach you along your path to retirement and financial independence. I am Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda. She is a corporate in-house lawyer and real estate referral agent, and we are very grateful you've joined us. Check us out on Facebook at Rock on the Money or the website at rockonthemoney.com. 100 of these suckers.
Yeah, that's a lot. We're in triple digits now.
And yet we still have people that are not listening that are asking questions.
We do.
So can we I know this is episode 100, should be something special, but we're just going to make it a regular episode. Maybe we can celebrate some other day. Look, can we revisit something that I posted on Facebook and get your commentary on it? I posted, and I did this because it's end of the year, and I figured Some people probably have not done this yet. I just said, hey, it's time to rebalance our 401ks, 457s, or 403bs. That's pretty much all I said.
Yep.
And
why are you starting trouble, Craig?
People went out of their minds. Like, What is this? Blah, blah, blah. I thought it was something super basic that we've talked about probably 40% of our episodes of 100 of them. I'm sure if you could find the term rebalance in probably 40 of the 100. It is a setting inside your 401k that's right there that you can do on your own and make it automated. I thought that we've talked about this, but that post got 150 comments before I had to shut it off.
Well, I'm glad to see people are engaged.
Well, no, that's probably our most engaged post of 2020. It wasn't the downfall of the stock market in April. It was rebalancing your 401k. Of all things that I've ever posted, it was that. So how about we just...
Fascinating that's, you know, stirred up so much.
I'm like, it's not even that big of a deal. It should have been already automated. Anyway, but can you briefly explain this very simple, basic financial literacy term called rebalancing?
Sure. So when you have your retirement fund set up, you go in and you make an election at the beginning of the year or whenever you start your account, you say, I want, you know, 50% of my contributions to go towards this fund. Let's just say it's the S&P 500 fund. And I want 50% to go towards this other fund. You know, and Dave Ramsey suggests four different funds, right? And Craig, you'll have to remind me, which four does he recommend?
It's all growth funds, growth stock mutual funds,
but it's growth and income.
Yeah, there's a growth and income, growth, and then the international. Yeah, so.
And it's like 25% of each because it's four and it's equally divided. I mean, we go with one or two, S&P 500, if that's all you do, you know, that's great. If you do just one fund, you don't have to do rebalancing, by the way.
Because you brought it up, I would do international funds. I stay out of that. I stick with American companies because American companies are awesome, like Microsoft, Apple. I stick with America. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. So if you're doing more than one fund, so two or more, and I would not do more than four. So people, if you are using a financial advisor and they've got you in 25 different funds, like, that's insanity. Stop. Because you're not doing it. You're definitely not doing better than those of us who are in fewer funds. But if you have elected to do two funds, let's say at 50% each, you'll notice throughout the year that one fund may do slightly or more than slightly better than the other, and it'll start to skew your percentage. So at the end of the year, we do what's called rebalancing. Basically, if you think about two sides of a scale, like an old time scale, a balance scale, then we have to get everything back into that 50-50 balance. So you would just sell off whatever is higher, like the 60%, to bring it down to 50%, which will bring the other one up to 50.
There you go. It's and you can also go into your 401k account or call your provider and you can have it set to automatically do this.
Yes.
At what, 6 months or a year?
I would not do it more frequently than 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Yes, your account can automatically rebalance and they'll just do it for you. There's usually just a button or you just give them a call. All these 401k providers are very, very helpful.
And you never have to do that again, people. It's automated. So once you set it, it's forget it. Yeah. Some people comment, well, who can I pay for to make sure this is going on? I'm like, no, this is like part of your 401k. It's basic. It's already there. Just call them and tell them to automatically do it annually at the end of the year.
But if you want to send someone a check, feel free to send it to our PO box, Craig.
Yeah, send us the money. That's fine. But
if you're jonesing to send a check to someone.
I will say that in my fire department career where I had a 457, I did this for many years. And the guy that was our representative, he talked about that. I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. And I do attribute my gains over that time because I went through the 2008-2009 fall. I had all that going on. And I do believe by that constant rebalancing, it did help accelerate my earnings over time.
Well, that's all it is. You just rebalance to go to what you had originally planned to have your allocation split.
Yep.
Because some things are going to perform better than others. That it's inevitably going to happen. Nothing performs exactly the same.
Right. As long as you pick the best funds in the first place, now you're even making it even better than it was before. It's awesome.
And you know, not to get overly complicated, but the same happens if you are doing your own selection of even single stocks. It's not what can happen, and it happened to me, is one single stock can blow up and suddenly you look at it and it's 50% of your portfolio and you had no intention of having so much of your portfolio put into one bucket because then your risk isn't, you know, diversified. So that's when you have to look and say, okay, I need to sell off some of these gains so that I can put it in other areas so that I don't have such a high percentage in one area.
That's a very good point. If you watch CNBC long enough, you'll see these investors come on there and they talk about they had to do a personal rebalancing. They have strict rules about 5% in this class, 5% that, if you listen. Mm-hmm. And so they will talk about they have to do it more often than a mutual fund. Because they have strict rules, which is very similar to a mutual fund. They basically built their own mutual fund for themselves is what they're doing with their stocks. And then they stick with those rules is what they're doing. So,
The easier way to cheat at that is to just simply put your money in a mutual fund. Like an S&P or an ETF, like an S&P 500 fund.
Pay someone else to do it for you. Right. Don't try and be your own mutual fund. You guys, I don't want to do that. It's too much work. I just pay the mutual fund and pay a tiny little fee and I'm happy. That was awesome. Hopefully that made sense to everybody.
Yeah.
The ones that are listening.
Yeah.
We have some questions, Amanda.
Okay.
Here we go. You ready for this one?
Sure.
I need help with the math. Can you please Can you please break down the math in the book where one with a 50K salary gets to $3.6 million by contributing 15% to their 401k with no salary raises working 40 years after college? I see how you can contribute $300,000 by 65, but not the $3.6 million. What assumptions am I missing?
You're missing the magic of compounding.
Yeah, so the book they're referencing, I had to find. Well, what book are you talking about? They're talking about the Total Money Makeover. There's an example in the book.
The Bible.
Yeah, there's an example in the book that talks about someone that makes $50,000 a year can end up with $3.6 million by contributing 15% to the 401k, even if they get no raises and work 40 years. It's not understanding that compounding returns is what makes this work, getting an average of 8 to 12% per year in an index fund or funds. Yes, you can have $1 to $3 million without any issues if you're debt-free and all
the
other things.
What else this really illustrates, Craig, is the difference of if this person had simply put that money into a savings account, making almost no interest, the huge difference it is.
Oh, absolutely.
$300,000 versus $3.6 million. That is the difference when you start investing in bonds because you don't want to have any risk, or you're putting it in a savings account because you don't want to risk losing money. You're talking about you lost out on more than tenfold what you could have had.
So the person also said, I can see how you can contribute 300,000 by 65, but not 3.6 million. Yeah, they're not.
This isn't about contributions. Yeah. So you contributed 300,000, but the growth is what led you to 3.6 million.
And okay, I'm going to be a little open and honest here. Amanda, I contributed between 300,000 and 400,000. Mm-hmm. To this day, I'm retired. I look at that account and I'm still boggled by compounding returns.
Yes.
Over time. I'm looking at why I contributed because I can't put more money in there anymore. I'm retired. Right. It's locked out. But what's in there, I have not touched. I still have not touched it. It's amazing.
This is also why we continue to harp on the fact that you should be contributing to a Roth so that that money that's growing is you get to collect it without paying additional income tax on it. So again, if you'd put this into a traditional, then that gain of $3.3 million, you would still have to pay income tax on as you pull it out. If it's in a Roth and you only contribute $300,000, but it grows to $3.6 million, the $3.3 million in growth is completely tax-free.
So,
and that's insanity, right? Like the government is not getting a dime off of $3.3 million.
Right. I know it doesn't make sense, people, but here's what you can do to just check us on the math. It's basic math. So here, I mean, if I put $7,500 a year into your 401k, we're not even maxing our 401k out, Amanda.
Not even max.
10% returns average, which is very easy to get with an index fund. Mm-hmm. 40 years into a calculator, a compounding interest calculator, comes out to $3.6 million, $3,658,888.58 to be exact.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So
that's your 3.6.
That's crazy. What's 7,500 times 40? That is $300,000 into a 401k somehow turned into 3.6 million.
Right. And you can do that with a simple S&P 500. So last year, 2019, all of 2019, the S&P 500 index was a little over 30% return. Right. This year, it's around a 15% return. Remember, we had a rough March,
right,
April.
Right. And there will be some years.
So even with as horrible of a year it's been, it's still a 15% annual return.
Right. It still beat the average. And there will be years in the future it'll be might be negative or zero. But over time, you'll get 8 to 12% and usually it's 10. So there's a great calculator. I'm going to put in the show notes at investor.gov. It's run by the federal government. It gives you basic financial tools so you can check things. They have a compounding interest calculator. All you do is put in your numbers, put in whatever numbers you want. Put in $10,000 a year, put $5,000, put in an interest rate of 10%. See what comes out in 40 years. You will be shocked at what you can do with $200,000, $300,000, and you will be an everyday millionaire. Multi-millionaire, Amanda, as long as you stay out of debt and do all the other things we're telling you to do. This is just one part of the puzzle. But there you go. You got to stay out of debt, too. Because that's
the magic of compounding.
And stop buying stupid toys you don't need and stuff like that. So anybody making $50,000 a year, which most people can go out and get that job, Amanda. Mm-hmm. You can get that from working at Walmart. You can. You get paid $15 an hour starting at Walmart. You can make $50,000 a year, $40,000, $50,000. So anybody can be a millionaire. It takes a lot of discipline along that path of 40 years, though. All right. We beat that one down. You want another one? Of course
you do.
Sure,
let's do one more before the break.
Yeah. Is it okay to join the military if you don't know what to do?
Yes.
I'm currently 19, thinking of joining the Air Force. I love that. Plan on literally saving every dime and living on rice and beans if I go. Wait a minute, before you're the wife of a military guy. So this is coming.
Depends where you are, but if you are somewhere that you can't leave, the military will feed you and you'll have options either better or worse than rice and beans.
Wait a minute, what do you mean worse?
Well, it could be those MREs depending on where you are.
Hey, I've had those. They're not so bad.
Those are terrible.
Well, I know.
Some of them are good, but most of them are terrible. Yeah. But if you're someplace else, generally you have like they call it a dining facility, a DFAC, and it's like a little mini buffet. So right. You can choose from all sorts of things like halibut sandwiches or salads or all that. So you can do better than beans and rice, but I'm off the topic. Yes, you can join the military if you don't know what to do. You join, you go through basic, and then, you actually don't always get to pick what you want to do. You get to say, hey, these are the things I'm interested in. And then depending on what the need is, they'll slot you into what is needed. And then that's the route you're on. So I think it's a great way to explore things that, maybe you hadn't thought about exploring until someone forced you to do it, right? But you'll find out, is this something I enjoy doing or not? And then if it's not, you can always change your specialty as well. There's a process for it. It's not impossible.
I love that they want to go to the military if they don't know what to do. I love it. I'm all for the military.
Yeah.
It's not all like going to war save your money. And stuff, guys.
If you're not married and you don't have dependents right now, 100% save all your money. Don't be spending it on fancy cars, which I see a lot of young soldiers doing. Speaking of military, Craig, I saw that we now have a name for those people who have joined the Space Force.
Oh, what was that?
So, the Army has soldiers.
Right.
The Navy has sailors.
Yes.
Brace yourself. The Space Force has guardians.
No.
For real. I'm not joking.
Guardians? Like Guardians of the Galaxy?
That apparently, yeah.
Okay. I want to be a guardian. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Wait, what does Space Force do? Is they like operate the satellites and stuff? I thought the Air Force did all that. I guess it came from the Air Force, right? So I guess they take over all that space stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. So they're taking over the skies, yes.
Well, there is, we're getting off topic, but I saw 60 Minutes where they are concerned about other countries taking out our satellites because they have satellites that have lasers to take out other satellites. So I totally understand the theory behind the whole thing.
Yes. So and we actually do know people who have transitioned now from the Army to the Space Force. So actually, it's funny, like you get put out of one military branch. And so for like 15 minutes, you're not part of the military because they discharge you and then you get picked up by the Space Force. So,
I mean, I personally would love to be in the Space Force. That would be kind of cool.
I would just to be called a guardian.
I'm a guardian of the galaxy, or at least Earth. That'd be kind of cool.
And that's call not me political Star Lord.
Yeah, I'm not political or anything, but I can see why they do it. It's probably the span of control of the Air Force having to deal with that up there when they got stuff down here to deal with. I can see why you're farming that out. It's just getting busier up there that the Air Force can't handle all of it. So it makes logical sense.
So, yes, I just think we have some naming problems.
Well, yeah, the name is kind of weird, but Space Force is kind of weird. Sounds like a movie.
Literally comics.
we probably could come up with something a little different. A little more scientific. Yeah, so, all right. Well, let's take a quick break. And we got how many questions? We got four more questions. Yeah, they're not that. They're really good ones, actually, but they're quickies. We'll be right back right after this. You're listening to Rock on the Money.
Rock stars, Amanda here with ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Are you about to sell your home or excited to buy your first or next home? I'll be honored to help you find an expert to work with you in your local area. At ChoiceRealtyConnect.com, I'll help match you with up to 3 qualified licensed agents that specialize in your specific market. Choice Realty Connect serves every zip code in all 50 states with a network of 15,000 top-rated agents that are ranked within the top 5% for sales. Whether you're selling or looking for a condo, new construction, retreat, vacation property, or you're a first-time home buyer, let me connect you with the perfect top agent today. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. The choice is yours.
Amanda Braun is a Florida licensed real estate with a brokerage, Realty Connect.
Rockland, USA.
the money with Amanda and Craig. Don't forget to check out the website at rockonthemoney.com or the Facebook page, facebook.com/rockonthemoney. Speaking of Facebook, Amanda.
Oh, boy.
If people are listening at this point, we had something major happen with me last week.
Yes. Yes. Tell us. Well, we, I had we something major talk about on the last too, show. But let's talk about you first.
Well, yeah, we couldn't talk about it in the last show. Because I was on an NDA at the time. I signed a contract to be exclusive to Facebook as far as gaming.
Yeah.
But the problem is, Amanda, all these adults out there are like, cool story, what is that? Yeah. But if you ask a kid, all kids and teenagers and people in their 20s, they're like, they know it's the highest level of gaming streaming you can do, and it's a big deal. But anyone over 30, like, okay, that's kind of cool. So I've reached the level that your kids want to be at is where I'm at.
Yes.
Yeah. Every kid in school wants to be a YouTuber or a streamer. And yep. I've been signed exclusive to Facebook on Facebook Gaming. So that's kind of cool. So I'm officially in a partner with Facebook. And I can't talk about the details under the contract.
But it's been something you've been working towards for months now.
Yeah. Well, I just... See, here's the thing. It's like I wanted to prove it to myself because it was during the pandemic. I had nothing to do. Yeah. We're doing the podcast, obviously, but I was like, I used to stream years ago. I'm like, can I do it as a 57-year-old in a teenager millennial world? And I gave it everything I had. And I completely, thanks to all the viewers who just stood by me and helped supported me and all that, we just blew it out of the water. I mean, we are, it's huge. And I am still trying to catch up. I'm way
behind. And you're having fun.
Well, that's the key. I'm having fun. It's not for the money. I just enjoy it. I have people from every country, Kenya, Pakistan, Iraq. I have people from all over the world coming in, just having fun. Doesn't matter your religion, your political backgrounds. Everybody just comes in there. It's a huge community that's come together and we just have stupid fun. And that is so, there's no other place I can do that. And I just enjoy it. I really do. It's stupid, I know, to older people my age, but I'm having a blast. It's so many friends from around the world, but you know, it's hard to explain.
Well, I have something this week that has been a year in the making as well.
Talk to me. What?
I got my hair cut.
Oh, okay. So guys, listen to this. She gets her hair cut. Can I say what your reaction was that night?
Sure.
Yeah, she was not happy. No. You were crying.
Well, no, I mean, that's an exaggeration. I was nearly crying.
Maybe. Okay, she is gorgeous. That hair color is so you.
Yeah.
Though I do love the blonde hair, but the way you're, I don't know, I think you overreacted. I think it was such a dramatic change, you weren't ready for it.
Wait. That's exactly it. So I did. Yeah. My hair had grown so long during this whole COVID and pandemic. I hadn't had my hair cut since last December. Yeah. So a year, really. So, I cut it all off and changed the color.
It's look, I'm a guy. I don't know hair colors, but it's like an amber color or.
Yeah, I guess something like that. Yeah. It's like a reddish.
Yeah, it's. It's short, but it looks really good on you. It's I don't know who the stylist is. I think they nailed it. But it's such a dramatic. If you take your pictures, put them side to side, look totally different people. I think you weren't ready for that.
Yeah, I could be on the run now. It's a disguised look.
Easily. I mean, no, you look like different. You know, looks amazing. But I thought it looked amazing. Yeah, I may be biased. That's the difference.
So anyway, that was the excitement here this week was.
No, it looked amazing. It's a shame
we're not traveling this year because of COVID. I know. So this is the extent of our December excitement.
All right. Hey, we got some more questions.
Okay.
Here's a simple one. How can I make an extra $1,700 a month? That's the question.
Yeah, we get these types of questions a lot and. We generally say, well, there's a lot of gigs out there. You could do all sorts of side gigs. Yeah. And it's hard for me to answer that question very specifically because it depends on what a person's interested in. Right, Craig?
Right. Yeah, it depends on what your skills or what are you passionate about, like me in the gaming.
Right.
It's easy for me to make that gaming because I don't even feel like I'm working.
Right. So let's say, and certainly it wasn't anything near that when you started, but yet just yes or no, you don't have to tell us the exact amount, are you able to make $1,700 a month doing what you're doing?
I'm already laughing. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
We're way beyond that. So that's one example, but you have to be creative. You know, no one's going to hand you $1,700 a month just because you need it. So you're going to have to hustle and work your tail off for it. You know, you could drive for Uber Eats. You can drive just regular Uber. You can do DoorDash. You can deliver pizzas for Domino's. You can create something and sell it on Etsy. You know, I'm just naming off a few things here on the fly, but there are so many other things that aren't right so much in your face that you can just create a business out of.
And can I add my one little part in here because I'm 57 and I'm passionate about this. It's also called work.
I was thinking that as well. Like, you could, you know, get a second job. You can work more hours if you're able to work overtime at your hourly job, you know.
But like you said, no one's just going to hand you $1,700. It's called work. And if you don't like to work, you're not going to get $1,700.
Yeah.
Like this gaming thing. I don't want to come back to this, but it's a good point. I have a bunch of people that watch me that suddenly went out and bought a gaming PC. And like, well, you inspired me to stream. I'm going to do it so I can do this as my job.
Okay.
Okay. So I never in there did I hear anything that you had a passion for it or you ever wanted to be a streamer before. It's kind of like people in our group that want to buy stocks, but they're never a stock trader. All of a sudden they're a stock trader. It's like, unless you're passionate, you're not going to make, they say, well, he got his millions of fans around the world all suddenly. Well, if he can do it, I can do it.
Which is true, but they have to work for it.
But they don't see that I'm streaming 7 days a week, 6 hours a day, starting at 4 a.m. in the morning. Then I do another 6 to 10 hours afterwards, getting ready for the next day, promoting it, creating new content, trying to figure out what can I do next and reviewing what I did. They don't see that I'm actually doing 12 to 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for the last 5 months. They just see, oh, he's playing a video game. I'm going to go drive a truck. That's what they see.
Yeah.
It's just like a basketball player. Basketball players, everyone says, oh, Michael Jordan. Oh, now, I can't believe he makes all that money. But they didn't see that he was in the backyard for 12 hours a day shooting hoops.
Right.
People don't see the work part. So if you want to make $1,700, that requires work. $1,700 is a lot of money as a side gig. That's a lot of money. So I'm very passionate about people, you know, thinking, oh, I'm just going to go do this. I'm going to just make this money. No. You have to work. That's how you make money. So
the other way you make an extra $1,700 a month is you cut from your expenses.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because when I put that question in there, I said, you know how you can make that money? By cutting out. That's the easiest way to make your money.
The easiest way is to cut expenses.
Yep. Or selling all the stuff in your house. At least you have a short term 1 or 2 months. You can make $1,700 on eBay.
Yeah.
So,
and we did talk about how to turn eBay into a side hustle for yourself as well. Absolutely. We had a great interview with Dana a number of episodes ago.
Go into Walmart, go to the clearance rack and resell the stuff on eBay and you can do
retail arbitrage.
But it requires what, Amanda?
Work.
And you got to get off the couch. You can make as much money as you want, but it requires you getting up and getting out and doing it. Everyone talks, but no one does. That's a big thing with me. All right. Next question. What's the most you've ever been in debt and where are you at today?
Oh, this is an awesome question.
So they're asking us. I guess they want to feel inspired.
Yes.
You want to go first?
Yes. So when I graduated out of law school, I had a combined student loan debt from undergrad, master's degree, and law school. So 3 degrees there, that was around $93,000 plus a car loan at the time. So, and I don't remember what that was because at the time I didn't consider that part of my debt, much like many people do today. But that was probably another, I don't know, $20,000. So let's just say ballpark $115,000.
All right.
And that took just over 2 years to pay off.
There you go.
And then, so that was probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Really? See, because I know the second part of this, so I'm like totally amazed.
Yes. So since then, I've been saving and investing. And so I'm going to say combined that what, so Matt also had a car. Well, no, he had paid off his car. So between the two of us, we had a probably $115,000 in debt, not including where we live. Like, I don't include that part.
Because you're married and we combine our debts.
Yes.
Yeah.
But not including where we live. So right. You either have a rent payment or a mortgage payment, right?
Right.
So not including that, probably about 115, and we paid off in 2 years. And then we've been making heavy investments since then. And yeah, as of this month, this year, I guess I can share. We just crossed over.
It's up to you. But I'm so proud of you.
Our net worth. Our net worth, as it would be calculated by the Ramsey team and Chris Hogan, has crossed over the $1 million mark.
So you're an everyday millionaire.
Yes.
Boom.
Combined.
And this is in the span of how many years? So you said 5 or 6 years. You went from 115 in debt.
Well, I graduated in 2014, and it took us 2 years to pay off that debt.
Right.
Yeah.
So combined by the efforts of you both, knocked out $115,000 in debt, and now you're an everyday millionaire 6 years later.
6 years later.
In a total 6 year span.
Right. I mean, obviously we've made some investments that have paid off handsomely. Yeah,
but you know, it's no different than what we coach. You didn't do anything different than what we say.
No.
Yeah. So when people
I will tell you the fastest it happens is getting rid of any type of car payment.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. That's a huge dent.
It's huge when you don't have a car
payment. Oh my God. I'm so glad I don't have car payments anymore. I refuse to have a car payment. I don't want it. That's a big hit. Everybody knows that feeling when you go do your bills. What's typically the biggest bill other than your mortgage? It's that car.
Yeah, so if you don't have that, imagine what you can be doing with that money and how that money can double itself so quickly.
The average car payment in America is $506 a month. That's the average.
Mm-hmm. So, that's what you would need to contribute to your Roth IRA to get it to $6,000 for the year.
Right.
And so if you don't have a car payment, you can have a fully funded Roth IRA.
And that $6,000 turns into $1 million in 40 years.
Yeah.
You're a multimillionaire. In that previous example.
I will say we don't feel like millionaires because, you know, we're here. All right. So here's a funny story. Now that you've outed me as an everyday millionaire. Okay. Funny story. We were at Costco last weekend right after we did this calculation. And of course, the Airbnb IPO helped just nudge us over that line. Right, that's not what made me a millionaire.
Right.
It was a very small but, you know, very nice little reward. So we're at Costco last weekend and Matt's been wanting these macaroons for like a couple months. So we walk out to the aisle there and these macaroons, it's a box of, I don't know, 36 maybe.
Right.
He's like, oh my God, they're $16. That's way too expensive for a box of macaroons. I looked at him. I said, I think we can afford a box of macaroons at this point. Let's treat ourselves. But that's just an illustration of that's how we think is like, no, that's crazy. I'm not blowing $16 on a box of macaroons.
How many times have I brought this up?
Celebration.
I brought that up how many times that the problem with people as they get to that level is they have a hard time spending.
Yeah.
They do. And because of where you were, you're deep inside your brain, you don't want to go back. So you're worried about this little box of macaroons, but that's normal, actually.
Yeah. And Craig, we should post the picture in our group of the office chair that we've been using as well.
And a picture of the new one that I'm sending you.
Yeah. So the office chair is held together, literally held together with clear packing tape at this point.
In your everyday millionaires, and you have this rickety chair.
It still functions as a chair because you can still sit in it.
It's a good thing you guys are still young because my back would be completely shot after an hour of sitting in that thing.
All right. So anyway, I know we're a little bit off track, but that's my point is you don't get to this place by spending like you're already, you know, wealthy. Nope.
And then you'll find out when you get there, when you finish and succeed, you don't spend. You don't have the Mercedes sitting outside. You have the Honda Accord is what happens.
Right. That's why I didn't get my hair cut for a year. You know, I'm not spending money on haircuts.
I just got a haircut last Sunday. I haven't had a haircut in 4 months. My hairstylist got pregnant and everything.
Not by you.
Two brand new buildings on the way there. I'm like, where those buildings come from? Like a whole school got built while I was sitting in my basement playing video games. I'm like, how long have I been in my basement? All right.
Yeah. And you know, we buy our clothes at the discount store and we wear them until they fall apart. Matt is literally sitting in the other room in sweatpants that are covered in paint from our projects. And that's just what we wear.
But I will say this before the next question. Those are the most comfortable sweatpants ever. Well-worn sweatpants are the most comfortable ever.
Yeah. And we wear shirts until they have holes and stains in them, you know.
All right, here's the next question.
Wait, whoa, what? Well, only I answered that question.
Oh, okay. So the most I've been in debt probably was because of my kids' student loans.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't get political or anything regarding how you can get grants in America, but my kids didn't qualify for anything.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. Because I'm very opinionated about that. But anyway, since my kids don't qualify for anything, and at the time I was not aware of a lot of this stuff going on that, debt-free, but my daughter wants to be a teacher. Well, you have to go to college for that. My son wanted to be an aeronautical engineer. Well, you have to go to college for that. So between their student loans, and of course, because they can't qualify for anything because of incomes and race and everything, they just don't qualify. So I ended up having to do all those Parent Plus loans where I have to co-sign everything. Well,
yes,
that loan is mine. It's not theirs.
Right.
So because of that, even though they were paying on them, it was still my debt. So the total of all that was probably $90,000-some.
Mm-hmm.
So I went worked multiple jobs extra on top. Even though I made them keep paying, they paid their portion. I added on top of that to accelerate to get off my credit report.
Yeah.
So I retired and I worked two full-time jobs in retirement, Amanda. Even though my kids would have paid it off, I'm also helping out what we want to call legacy. I'm all about legacy. Yep. I'm setting up my family tree from this point forward. My kids will be set. I wanted to get that debt off their plate so they could also work. And then whatever I make, I can pass it down. But the requirements are I want them to keep doing. I want this branch to go as far as possible in the future, starting with me. I'm very passionate about that. So now because all that's off the plate, I'm still working these jobs. But now it's like gravy on top. Now I can use that to actually invest. But I can just say I'm okay. The investments I never touched. Yes, I could have touched my 401k. I could have touched the 457 and made those loans go away.
Yeah.
But I did not, Amanda.
And you've been an everyday millionaire for quite some time.
It actually didn't happen till 6 years ago.
Okay.
I started late. If I'd known all this stuff.
Yes.
Many years ago, I would be you're going to pass me. At some point,
yes.
Because you guys are young. If I'd known what I did now, I'm doing beyond the everyday millionaire. I don't want to get into numbers, and then it keeps doubling, and I'm still not spending any of it. I haven't touched it. But so when people say they want to touch their 401k, I've got two full time jobs working 7 days a week in retirement when I didn't have to work at all.
Yep. Just like I continue to work a second job.
I do get passionate when I see people like, well, I can make my desk away. I'll just take my 401k. I'm like, no. Look, I went out and got two full-time jobs. And anybody else can do that too. And there were jobs I did not need a degree for, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I get passionate about that. And because I did not do that, all that money I did not touch, because we had a pandemic coming in here and all those loans were paid, because I never touched it. You know, Amanda, I told Amanda this one account I have from my fire department 457, right? this one stock account, because I took money out there to buy ETFs and stuff. It is up 101.88% for this year. That's including a pandemic.
Yeah, so your money there doubled this year. And if you had taken money out, there'd be less to double.
Right. So she knows the numbers, but guys, I'm trying to tell you, don't touch your 401ks, because you never know when this once in a lifetime opportunity comes along. I know people died. I get it. But there was a lot of money made this year by people that did not touch their 401ks.
Right.
And that's the point. Even with, and that's not from the bottom in April, Amanda. That is from January to December. 101% gain. That's a double in 1 year. I am still boggled by this whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that touched their money and missed out. And they're still missing out. They think it's okay.
Well, I think that answers the question.
Yeah.
All right. Hold question on. Five.
I was tripped over my soapbox here. There we go.
Yeah, I know. It fell off of it. How do you get money from the bank or a deposit a large amount without getting flagged? I want to pay for my next car in cash and have the money in the bank, but the issues I'm dealing with just getting my money has been truly ridiculous. How do other baby steppers deal with this?
Oh, that's easy. I bought my daughter's car. She's a teacher. I helped her out. So I bought her car with cash, a used car. $13,000 Honda Civic. Mm-hmm. Used car, great car, and she still has no problems with it. I went to the bank, got a certified check.
Oh yeah, a cashier's check.
Yeah, and went got there.
Or you can write a personal check if they'll take a personal check. A lot of places won't take a personal check for that amount, but yeah, a certified check. It's not like when we say you have to pay cash, it's not as if you have to show up with a bag full of ones.
That's when things go bad, is when you have more than $10,000 of cash.
Cash.
Not if you're using certified. Traceable. It's the traceable money is the issue. The cash is not traceable. A certified check, bank check, all those are traceable. That's what they're trying to, that's where the laws get.
Yeah. And if you're not sure what kind of car you're going to buy or where it's going to go, you can get a check for a general amount, like, you know, $13,000 and then make up the difference in cash or your personal check. Yeah.
And the dealer will give you the amount back. You're over. Yeah. That's common. That happens all the time. So no, once you're walking around with thousands of dollars in you're going to get robbed or something.
It's funny. I just saw an article in the news this morning, like an investigative report about, you know, seizures of cash from police or even commonly at the airport when you're going through, like you win a bunch of money in Vegas and you have these stacks of cash in your purse and you go through security. It looks suspicious, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So they seize the cash because they can, even without charging you with a crime. And so some lady had like $42,000 taken off of her. Another lady was trying to travel with $82,000 that from her dad's estate that was supposed to be deposited into a bank and it was seized, you know.
Of course.
Just don't travel with a whole bunch of cash. You never know what's going to happen. You don't have to fight a year with the DEA to try and get your money back.
You should, when you travel, you should only have a couple hundred dollars in cash. The rest of it should be credit card, whatever, or debit card, or something like that.
I mean, it's not illegal to carry cash around. It's just suspicious.
But of course, no, people just don't walk around with $40,000 of cash in their suitcase. It's looks like a drug runner or something like that. Yeah, you're going, come on.
Yeah, I mean, if you're traveling in or out of the country, so internationally, then there are definitely laws about declaring the money. You don't have to declare or be limited to amount of cash if you're just traveling.
Yeah, 10,000 is the big one on that one. I've seen the forms multiple times. Since I work for an airline, I know about that. So,
but because of money laundering laws, this person's question is about getting flagged. So the flagging happens if it's like over a $10,000 transaction. So.
Yeah, don't do cash. Yeah. No, use a check. It'll be okay. It's the same thing. Okay. As long as it doesn't create a loan, that's all we're worried about. Mm-hmm. Number six, Amanda, last one. Yeah. It's about Dave Ramsey. And I've heard this on his phone calls because I listen regularly as I'm working. Dave seems to be totally against shacking up.
Mm-hmm. Mostly for religious reasons, but also for financial.
Well, you made that, playing house is what you like to say. I have met a beautiful girl who I can see myself with for many years to come. Aw, so cute. Right now, we live independent of each other. Not in a hurry to pop the question, but I want a little... Bob, are you following this?
It's like, I am. He can see himself with her together, but not ready to pop the question.
And we haven't had her approval of this whole thing. It sounds like a Judge Judy situation come up. Not in a hurry to pop the question, but I want a little advice on creating the foundation for a healthy marriage. Wait a minute. There's no money. Okay, so we can only answer this in money aspect.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not relationship counselors.
Yeah.
So the one thing I will say is don't combine your money until you're married. And I am not religious by any stretch of the imagination. So it's not for religious reasons. Mine's 100% because of financial and legal reasons. Do not combine your money until you're married. Keep your separate accounts, put your own income in your own account, pay your own expenses out of your account. I don't have a philosophical or moral reason not to live with someone. If it saves you money, I say go for it. And you're compatible, go for it. But you're roommates. Right. You are roommates and you have separate expenses. You contribute to the expenses separately. And you do not combine or commingle your money or income.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, and Judge Judy says it all the time. Like, there are no courts for people who are playing house.
And you're so
if something were to go bad and you know, you can't go to court and sue someone for, well, you know, I paid 100% of the mortgage payment and she was supposed to be responsible for half. Well, but she wasn't. So tough.
Right. And then when you get married, her debts are now your debts.
That's right. You have a pronoun change there. Everything that was yours or mine becomes French. It all becomes we.
And beyond that, I would suggest that you both discuss money. Are you on the same game plan? If she loves to shop or you like to shop, I mean, it goes both ways. It's not just the women. Men love to buy toys also.
Yes.
I mean, it just looks different. It's not shoes. It's this. So if you aren't agreeing on the same thing, I would recommend that you do, well, I don't know, maybe the Dave Ramsey course. At least take it together before you get married. That way you all are in agreement on debt. We're not going to be in debt. We're going to pay off our debt. At least figure out where you're at in the baby steps. And you are in agreement how you're going to invest. It's easier to do it before you get married than try and fix it later. It's really difficult later.
Disagreements over finances are one of the top reasons for divorce.
So if you can nip that in the butt, do Financial Peace University before you get married. That way you have a plan. Even how much you're going to spend on the wedding can be taken care of right then.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. It will make you more successful and you will have a great retirement later. And the chances, I would believe, I have no data, the chance of you staying together till death do you part or whatever it is, it is much greater than if you try and do this later and try and fix it.
And frankly, I actually take a different position than Dave on this one. I think, so setting the finances and all that aside, philosophically, I think it's important to know if you're compatible with living with someone before you get married.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like if you can't stand someone squeezing the toothpaste from a different part of the tube, I think it's important you learn that early.
Yeah, don't forget. Yeah.
So. But don't mix your money.
Yeah. Stop.
Not until that marriage certificate ink is dry.
If she has $200,000 in student loan debt, well, guess what? You just inherited $200,000. It's both. So
I would say do not buy a house together until you're married.
Right.
I don't mind if you stack up, but it better be in a rental. Do not buy a house together. Or it can be one person's house, but you should not have both people buying.
This is a lawyer saying this, guys. Listen, I mean, I'm aware of it too, but you know.
Yeah. Do not buy a house together or a car together or anything of major consequence together unless you're married.
You know how many times we hear that phone call on these various talk radio shows of people that do that and now they're trying to undo it? Oh, my goodness.
Or my boyfriend needed a car to get back and forth to work. So, I co-signed for it. That's the other thing we hear.
Yeah, don't do that stuff, guys.
Which means it's your loan too. And now we broke up and now I have this, $13,000 car loan for a car I don't have.
25% of those Judge Judy cases are that. Yeah.
Yeah. We got no time for that.
All right. This is a great episode, Amanda. For one other episode, this is probably one of our better ones. This is awesome.
100. All right.
This is awesome. 100. All right. Well, thank you very much, Amanda.
You can find Amanda on Instagram and Twitter at Agile Amanda. And you can find me on all of your favorite social media platforms at Rockland USA. Don't forget to check out the website and subscribe to the podcast. All the links are right there on the front page, rockonthemoney.com. Please subscribe and leave comments to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or even your favorite app that you got right there on your phone. Those help us out a lot. If you're ever looking for a specific topic or content that we've produced over time, just go to the website and in the search bar, just type in your topic, be it 401k, stimulus check, or anything, and everything comes right up for you. We have so much gratitude that you've taken the time out of your day to listen to our podcast while you're walking, driving, traveling, or whatever you're doing. Please send us an email. Let us know how you're doing out there. Podcast at rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. Thank you very much again. We'll see you again next time. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.